So, for those of you who have been here before, you know we've been working with a lovely text by Trelag Kyobgon, who was a beloved Tibetan Buddhist teacher. And this is his text on the Lojong. And in Lojong practice, as you find in other texts, some of the rather comprehensive texts, like the Lam Rim, the stages of the gradual path, what you find is an effort by the teacher to keep circling around the central themes of Buddhist teachings, right? To find really different ways to try to reflect upon what the spiritual tradition is offering. And I find it so interesting because I do reread these texts throughout the years, and each time I find some new element. It's a little bit like circumambulating Stonehenge or some fascinating place where each time we do it, there's some dimension that we haven't seen before. It's actually also a little bit like walking down a New York City street that you've been walking down for 30 or 40 or 50 years. Right? Especially those of you who are New Yorkers, you know, it's amazing. You look up one day and you see a building, of the rooftop of a building, right? Or some dimension of the architecture that you've never seen before. I love that. And the Dharma is very similar. It has so much nuance to it, right? So many layers to the teachings. And so we've been exploring the central themes of the Buddha Dharma, right? Ways to basically understand the nature of the mind, which from a Buddhist perspective is a wonderful place to be. It's a very optimistic perspective on the human condition. And so the historical Buddha, I think in his radical way, suggested that even though most of us have a lot of internal tumult, right, a lot of struggle and pain and frustration and anxiety, right, the list goes on. I very much include myself in this experience. That if you take the time to really get to know yourself, to get to know your mind, and you keep really just allowing for what you noticed, especially on the more surface layers, right? Because those feelings that I just named, they tend to be very pronounced, right? They tend to be right at the foreground of the mind. Or if we think of it structurally, right on the surface. But just as geologists do, right, if you really begin to let your awareness drop down into the many layers of the mind, it is quite fascinating that what most of us will find if we stick with it is this deepest layer of clear seeing. Right? That's often how it's described, or spaciousness, non-judgmental awareness. And that level of mind qualitatively feels different than the more surface layers that seem to be imbued with some inherent quality. Right? When we're furious, there's not usually a lot of spaciousness there. It doesn't feel like there are lots of dimensions in which to walk around the fury. It's as if the fury is an inherent substance, right? It has an almost ossified substance that cannot be cracked open or explored. There are other feelings, right? Sometimes desire also has that quality, right? That feeling of, I must have this. It's the best thing, it's the only thing. again, the mind tends to get a little bit concretized with those feelings. And I'm not knocking them. You know, I think it's important just to stay curious about whatever it is we feel. But if you keep dropping down, right, you begin to notice that there's some layer of mind that holds all of those feelings, whatever they are. And that layer is really very receptive, right? It's like a gracious host that says, okay, you're here, wonderful. I'd like to get to know you. In contrast to the parts that typically want to get distance, right, from feelings that we don't care for, or insist on proximity to feelings that seem very attractive. So we've been exploring all of this throughout the last several months. And today what we're going to talk about are some of the guidelines for sustaining awareness of these teachings. And I find this very helpful because I notice in my own practice and I hear from many people that the teachings of the Buddha Dharma, right, the teachings of the historical Buddha, all the teachers that followed, seem to make a lot of sense. I think this is why many people are drawn to Buddhism, because it resonates with our experience. It's also very psychologically oriented, which is helpful because we all have a psyche. And so it's a religious tradition that says we're not just spiritual, right? We're also psychological beings. And we're embodied beings. So it's a tradition that seems to want to make a lot of room for the fuller truth of who we are. But then there's the question of how to continue practicing, right? Often we have that intention, but then something pulls us away from that intention. And again, it could be something very painful and consuming for being so. I know that experience. It could be a time of simply trying to cope with too much going on, right? And many of us are overstimulated. It could be a time of excitement, something that really draws the mind. And so it seems like we don't have time to just sit and watch the breath, get to know the mind. There's something we gotta get before it's too late. So in this last section, which is actually still fairly lengthy in the Lojong, there are basically lots of guidelines for how to try to sustain practicing. And by practicing, I mean cultivating that awareness that you can always tap into. And so the first pithy teaching in this section is, you are proficient if you can practice even when distracted. Sounds like a Zen koan, right? You are proficient if you can practice even when distracted. And there's a lovely quote here that says, a skilled horseman does not fall from his horse even when he is distracted. Right? In the same way, if you're able to take, in this case, it indicates adverse conditions that develop suddenly as aids to working with the mind, even without expressly directing your attention to do so, then you are becoming proficient in mind training or working with the mind. Now, this is, of course, a huge challenge. Because again, our experiences sometimes can be so overwhelming, it's so consuming, that it seems that they consume the entirety of the mind, right? They devour us. That's not always the case, right? For instance, you might watch something on TV that's gripping for 45 minutes, but then you're able to shift gears. Your mind is able to transition into some other state of mind. Or you might have lunch with a friend and you're talking about something that's compelling, but it doesn't keep the mind in that conversation. Again, you can be present, but then you go on with your day. And we all know those experiences. But then sometimes we find ourselves dealing with experiences that are so consuming, either because they shock us in good ways and in very painful ways, or because they seem so counter to what we understand to be reality, right? Not anything we could have fathomed, that the mind wants to stay there. And again, I really, bless you, I empathize with that experience, right? And sometimes the mind does need to stay with something that takes time to process. But in this pithy teaching, you are proficient if you can practice even when distracted. Part of what it's getting at is whatever is happening in our lives, right, can be fodder, bless you, can be fodder for efforts to tap into that non-judgmental awareness, right? Efforts to work with it in a way that helps us actually feel more connected to others rather than less connected and isolated. Right, a central theme in the Buddha Dharma is that we suffer when we grasp onto ourselves, which I might alter, not because I think that's incorrect, but to bring a psychological perspective, we suffer when we feel isolated from others. And often when we're going through something profoundly overwhelming, it can leave us feeling removed from others. But in the Buddha Dharma, we're encouraged just to think about how those experiences are our inroad to the collective, right? They can join us to others if we reframe what we're going through. Yeah. So I like this teaching a lot because I think often there's a fantasy that we can practice once things settle down, right? Once life is less weird and turbulent, maybe chaotic, then we can carry on with our spiritual efforts. But if it's too weird and chaotic, then really we should do whatever we can just to survive. It's a very, very understandable response. But this pithy teaching is saying, use whatever's happening to grow. Use whatever's happening to really get to know the truth of who you are, all the layers, right? Which might mean getting a little disidentified with certain parts of who we are, and a little more identified with parts that are there and we're not aware of, which often includes, I would say, that deepest layer of mind, referred to also as Buddha nature. Yeah. You are proficient if you can practice even when distracted. Okay, so I'm going to go through one more because this next one actually comes with three parts, and this is typical of Buddhist teachings where you'll have one teaching, but That will then open to a list of 11 things to help you remember that teaching, which connects to the 52 other things. This is why I have to reread. All right. So the next teaching, and this, by the way, is number 23. Always practice the three general principles. Always practice the three general principles. All right, that's a good reminder that there are three other things that are helpful to explore. The first one is remember to value your commitment. Remember to value your commitment. And I was appreciating this teaching as I was reflecting on Lojong before coming here last week. I don't think you have to be a card-carrying Buddhist to work with this teaching, right? You can come from any faith tradition or no faith tradition. But this teaching, remember to value your commitment, it wants to help us find a way to stay oriented toward what ushers in well-being. Right, and often when we're truly committed to something meaningful, to something valuable, then we're willing to stay the course. Right, this is why we have rituals for commitment toward all things valuable. Most of us need some help bringing the mind back from wherever it's gone. Right, the mind really loves to wander out in space, often to all the various planes of reality. And so when we take a commitment, right, and it really could, you can articulate this however it feels genuine for you. Right? I am committed to my own deepest well-being for the benefit of all. You can play with that. Right, but something that helps you feel truly invested in your own healing. Yeah. And so for people who have been practicing the Buddha Dharma and who feel very drawn to really cultivating that commitment, there are refuge ceremonies where you just try to amplify that feeling of commitment, right? Amplify the feeling of being determined, right? To bring the mind back to what ushers in healing. Remember to value your commitment. So another way of thinking about this part of that teaching is that often when we're trying to free ourselves from our difficulties, right, to work our way through pain and suffering, it's a longer process than anyone would care for. It's usually a little bit more labyrinthine. It usually involves some back and forth. Right, some experiences of progress, some experiences of regression, a lot of regression often. And again, more than we would wish for because we're human and because the mind is so complex. And so this teaching, remember to value your commitment, it's also meant to give sustenance and hope. This might take some time, and it might involve experiences that we didn't think we would have once we were solidly on a spiritual healing path. And so the commitment is saying, don't worry about it. Don't worry too much about that. Keep going. Right? Keep working with the mind. Keep noticing what causes suffering. keep noticing what the obstacles are to a genuine feeling of relative freedom and decompression and well-being. Don't let the struggles deter you. Just feel determined, no matter what. This is so important, right? Because it's very easy to sometimes feel that we've been thrown off course, but in such a dramatic way that it's not going to be possible to carry on. Right, when we're committed to our own well-being, that really means we're committed to the well-being of all, because we are relational by our very nature. There really is no way to separate oneself out from the human family. We try. Most of us really give it our very best effort. As an introvert, I know I turned this into an art form, but there's no way to do it. It's because we're up against the reality of who we are, right? We are relational, we're always dependent on others. That's how we begin this life, that's how we end this life. That is just our nature. So thank you for that reminder. But if we think about this maybe interpersonally, right, we're committed to our well-being and we're committed to the well-being of a specific other person, but then perhaps that person is no longer there for a variety of reasons. And maybe it doesn't feel like they're that committed to us. Very painful. How do you sustain the commitment? Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is through the skillful means of patience. Yeah, patience. Because sometimes those experiences can stir feelings of betrayal or abandonment, and that can stir the fury, and that can stir the wish for this person not to be well, but to die immediately and in some dreadful way, right? The mind can go to these places very easily. So how do you sustain that deeper commitment for everybody's well-being and maybe with a specific other with whom you're having real difficulty? It takes a lot of patience to simply allow first for whatever's arising. The fury, the despair, the confusion. How could this happen? I thought I was a nice enough person. I thought I was trying to be hospitable toward you. And now this? But it's often the confusion can be very, very overwhelming. And so to really understand that part of working with the mind is being supremely patient. That's very connected to this commitment. Don't give up on yourself and your capacity to wish all beings well, even if you're having fantasies of homicidal rage. Still, don't give up on yourself. Yeah. Okay, so just a couple more, exactly two more parts to this teaching. First, remember to value your commitment. And then the next one is refrain from distorted forms of thinking. Yeah, it's quite a challenge. Refrain from distorted forms of thinking. Yeah, of course, the mind goes to all sorts of examples of our distorted forms of thinking. And we have endless examples. In this particular context, the main event is the way in which the mind can sometimes get a little bit extreme with its efforts at healing, right? So it's possible to start to hold too tightly to any healing endeavor. And we know this on a more banal level with health regimes, right? We discover kale juice or celery juice, and then that's all we must drink ever, right? Have the B vitamins. You must have the B vitamins, and anything that obstructs our access to the B vitamins starts to take on a really nefarious quality. So the mind has this way of holding very tightly to whatever we sense is going to help us. And then that can generate suffering. So in this context, it means notice what you're doing with your spiritual efforts and path. Right? Notice if it starts to feel important to you that other people are meditating or other people are interested in the Dharma. Maybe they will be, maybe they won't be. Maybe they'll be interested in something else that ushers in their well-being. But just notice how the mind sometimes wants to take what helps us and turn it into some fodder for distress or tension, right? And in this teaching, very specifically, it's alluding to people on the path, often back in the day, monastics who become too rigid in their practice, right? Who deprive themselves of just the pleasure of, I don't know, eating some chocolate or being lazy one afternoon or watching a silly play or letting themselves be distracted, right? Refrain from distorted forms of thinking. It's very helpful. Again, just to bring that flexibility of mind to whatever it is we're committed to,